When I mention ocean, I really am talking about water as a general rule. It doesn't necessarily have to be salty for it to be important. And, you know, water is the basic element that, of course, sustains all life. And the ocean just happens to be the largest body of water out there. But, you know, streams, lakes, rivers, it doesn't matter. It all is connected. It is that proverbial life support system, that circulatory system. And what we do to it, we end up doing to ourselves. When we throw pollutants, toxic chemicals, all that sort of thing, in a water body, a stream or a lake or an ocean, it ends up back in our plate. Because we depend on the oceans for everything, for food, for weather, for all those things, all that stuff we end up putting in our oceans ends up in our plates and eventually ends up in our bodies. So we need to understand that protecting the oceans isn't so much an environmental thing as it is protecting ourselves and the future of our children to have the right to enjoy what we've taken for granted.
Your newest project is Mission 31. Tell me a little bit about what that project is.
Mission 31 is a project that I put together based on loosely on something my grandfather did a little over 50 years ago. And he was a pioneer in ocean exploration. As most people know the name, he brought basically the oceans to the general public around the world for over 50 years through the advent of the big screen. He had three Oscar winners, The World Without Sun, The Silent World, which most people remember, or at least remember the name of, and the Voyage to the Edge of the World. And then he went on to television and had a series of television that ran for several decades called The Undersea World of Jacques Cousteau. But he was first and foremost a storyteller as well, of course, as an adventurer. And in his time, he had to invent all sorts of things, including the first undersea habitats, meaning the first houses underwater. And he built one called Conchalf II, which was a village in the Red Sea underwater at two atmospheres, so 33 feet, with a habitat even deeper than that off of that. And Mission 31 is essentially takes the soul of what that was in terms of science and, of course, storytelling. And bringing it to modern times. Our goal was to go symbolically one day longer than my grandfather did with Conchalf II. They stayed underwater for 30 days. We went 31 days to mark that next symbolic fin step in ocean exploration. But really, we also leveraged all the modern-day communications tools which were not available to him back in those days. And that by that, I mean not only, of course, traditional film and television, but where we were communicating live underwater from within the habitat as well as outside in our aquanaut suits. And that gave us a very unique perspective and ability to connect with the world in real time from the bottom of the sea, which is pretty awesome.
And that's a world that most people will never see firsthand. Tell me a little bit about what it's like to be that deep in the ocean.
Well, and you know, that's a very good point. And that's really the focus. Of course, we did about 3 years of science in 31 days. And thanks to our partnerships with Northeastern University, MIT, and FIU, we were able to gather all this data and all this science, which will end up in at least 10, if not 12, papers based on a lot of things that none of us really see day to day, which, of course, is the biodiversity and the interactions thereof, which is also the effects of climate change-related issues at the bottom of the sea, which really affect us all, whether we know it or not.
So what is your favorite thing about being in the ocean?
For me, it's my home. I feel much more comfortable in the ocean than I do on land. I really feel a kinship with that environment. I also am always fascinated and ever curious, and I think I inherited that from my family, from my grandparents, my parents. The everlasting curiosity of this alien world, and we've explored less than 5% of our oceans to date. So everything that my grandfather and others like him have done, it was just the tip of the iceberg. And there's so many mysteries and so much beauty and so much just really interesting stuff down there that we have yet to look at and experience, that it really keeps my interest. And it's something that I've fallen in love with from a very young age. I couldn't imagine a planet without ocean. I mean, otherwise it'd just be another brown rock in space.
What are some of the ways that climate change is affecting the ocean that you saw firsthand?
Well, I mean, we all are seeing the effects of wonky weather and all that topside, meaning on land, and what that does to our crops, what that does to our economy, what that does to our homes, and so on and so forth. It's vastly more complex and, of course, scarier down below. Most climate change-related issues start from the ocean. So when the oceans start getting unpredictable and turbulent underwater, it ends up affecting air, right, our atmosphere, and therefore ends up affecting us. So really, when we talk about climate change-related issues, they start in the ocean, and that really is a determining factor. What happens in the ocean, a little bit like what you would imagine in air and on land, you get upwellings and downcurrents and all sorts of things that affect the natural biodiversity and life underwater. Everything from migratory patterns to the changing of biodiversity on reefs and so on and so forth. And we're just now starting to get a feel for that.
I mean, it seems that the ocean is something that people, a lot of people are fascinated by, but do you find that it's a challenge to help the general public kind of make the connections between these things happening in the ocean and what we see on land and telling them why they should care about what's happening to the oceans?
Well, my grandfather used to say people protect what they love. And if you don't understand something, if you don't know something, it's very difficult to care about it. And that's really been a challenge for my family and others to relate the importance of the ocean, whether it's through the lens of love, education, dire consequences, what have you, to a general public that doesn't necessarily get a chance to experience it. Certainly not any more than, say, a vacation, right? You go to the ocean because you love the feeling that it gives you. Right, you go and rent a house on the ocean front or on a water body and what have you, and it gives you a sense of calm, peace, well-being, all those things. We don't necessarily think of it that way; we just feel it. And to go that extra step and say, well, you know, the oceans are more are that, and then much more. They're really our life support system. Is a very cerebral thing to have to do to leap into that conversation. At the end of the day, people have to understand in order to love and to protect. If you don't have a child, you may love children and you may, understand intellectually to protect children and all that. But once you have a child or you're related to a child, it's much easier to understand and really feel the importance of protecting that child and giving them a good upbringing and giving them everything in life that that will make them a good human being. It's the same thing with the oceans, although the oceans, of course, are our mother, so to speak. At the same time, we really need to connect with it and understand it in a way that gives us a better sense of why I keep saying it's our life support system. Without it, nothing exists. Imagine our planet without oceans. Would any life exist on this planet? Water is the basis for all life that we've ever known. And that's something that we need to know intellectually, but we also need to feel it in our hearts, and we need to understand its importance in terms of protecting that life support system that connects us all.
Did you guys do any work on acidification?
We did by default because we were looking at pH balance as well as man-made chemicals within systems such as coral reefs and sponges. And we gathered quite a bit of pH and dissolved carbon, as well as, of course, temperature variations and so on. So, yes, we looked at acidification, which is, of course, a byproduct. The problem with climate change is you can't touch it. It's not tangible. You can't see its immediate effects unless you have a big storm, an unpredictable storm. It's really hard to grasp, literally, because it's a long-term effect. It's very very virulent. It's unpredictable, and some of the effects, like acidification, are invisible until it's too late. Right. So when we talk about the climate change and resulting acidification in the oceans and how that's affecting corals, how that's affecting zooplankton, and zooplankton are the babies of all those things that we love to watch and film and, of course, eat. Crabs, lobster, shrimp, clams, et cetera, et cetera. Then all of a sudden it becomes very poignant because it affects our daily lives. It affects our economy. It affects, of course, our ability to give sustenance and nutrition to billions of people around the world.
Fabien Cousteau, thank you so much for speaking with me.
It's been an absolute pleasure, and I look forward to seeing you all down south.